Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Get the start going well on this one, this try. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Plenty to talk about. Looking forward to Dylan Sin joining us, Kyle Dedenrip, and Zach Browning. Plenty to talk about on that side to get you updated on things like summer basketball. It is in full tilt all over the place down in South Carolina. We've got 3SSB, the Nike EYBL Tour, and a few others. The Major League Baseball All-Star Game last night was an absolute blast to watch. We are talking about that. And Kyle Schwarber, Indiana's Kyle Schwarber, wins the MVP with three long shots in the very unique format of how the All-Star game ended up being won last night. So, man, it was a great game, and I look forward to talking about that. Sorry about that weird start to the show, but I think we got her fixed up, and hopefully everybody will slide over and figure things out. But, man, yeah, and IU officially reinstates the Bison as its mascot. So there's that. Happy birthday to Fulton. Fulton's 26 today. He is celebrating, and congratulations to him for that. Caitlin Clark out again with a re-injury of that groin, it looked like. She did not look like she looked like she was in pain and was in some distress when she went out last night. So not good for her. She's not going to be playing in the All-Star game, obviously. I'm not even sure that if she was in this three-point contest that she will participate in that, much less the game. But unfortunate for her on that. But stuff happens, right? And kind of came back a little bit too much too soon. Luke Goody also, we heard that finally. But to no surprise, his attempt to get a 14th year of college basketball was denied by the NCAA. And so his career is in essence over unless he decides to try to play overseas or something like that. He could go join the assembly ball team for the TBT. I'm sure they could use him. And now that he is officially out. So we've got that going on, which is nice. So lots going on, man. Lots to talk about. Looking forward to Dylan Sin joining us. We'll talk about all that and more. And hopefully your day and week is started off right. How about that All-Star game? I mean, I don't watch All-Star games because they generally suck. Christopher says, I boycotted watching Major League Baseball when they moved the All-Star game from Atlanta 4 years ago. I will return when the commissioner's term ends next year. It is never good to bring politics into sports. Well, yeah, but that crap happens. But that the first of all, the All-Star game itself was amazing. The National League, which has, the American League has led all but I think, 6 innings of the last 11 All-Star games prior to last night, and the National League jumped out to a 6-0 lead, only to have the American League tied in the ninth with 2 more runs. So they tied and let them tie a few years ago, which was crap, but they had a very unique setup this year, and if the game was in a tie, you have another mini home run derby. And each team got to select 3 guys that had 3 swings at in a home run derby type situation. And each team had a couple, but Kyle Schwarber for the National League and the Philadelphia Phillies came to the plate. And it was goodnight, Irene, 3 times as his final shot. He goes down to his knee after roping one out there. And, man, he just crushed him. Ended up winning the MVP over that, which I'm super happy for Kyle Schwarber. I think that it probably should have been a tie between Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso from the Mets, who had a 3-run home run in the game. So, I hate to see a guy lose an All-Star MVP that had a 3-run shot in the game. But, hey, congratulations to Schwarbs, man. He had something else to his tackle box full of awards, World Series rings. Now he has an MVP in the Major League Baseball All-Star game. Cool trophy. They gave him a kind of a glass looking bat to have as the award. But the whole thing I'm thinking of, are you not going to give him a case for that? How is he supposed to get this thing? What do you walk around with a glass bat? How you tell me that's not going to be worrisome, that you're not going to break that thing? I don't know what it's made out of, but very, very cool, man. Very, very cool. It was fun to watch and just a good game as well. And you can never say that about All-Star games generally. So, but we'll see if that can continue in the future. But the National League gets a win via Kyle Schwarber and his veracity to take him deep. But fun to watch that game all the way around, and I enjoyed it. It kept me engaged. And I just can't. That's the first time I can say that for so long. It's hard to make All-Star games interesting because generally in basketball, they're not playing. They don't play defense. They don't care anymore. In football, you know, there's the worry of the injury. So they're down to playing flag football now. Baseball's the last. But now hockey, I can't say that I've watched the All-Star game, but I don't know that those guys take it that easy. So that may be. Michael didn't like the swing off. Not sure what else. How else would you like to see the game end? That you're not going to play that game out. I mean, because that thing could go another 5, 6, 7 innings. Who knows? And that's not. Nobody wants that. The people that are there didn't want that. The teams definitely didn't want that with their players, especially pitchers. You've only have so much pitching, man, and they're not going to run those guys' arms out. So I think that that's about as good a way as you can end something like that. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. I'm not going to lie. It was fun and engaging. Looking forward to Dylan Sins joining us on the program today, Kyle Nenrip, and Zach Browning. We'll get you caught up on what's happening with the IU recruiting and all of that. Kyle Nenrip has several Indiana kids here. They heard their names on draft day for Major League Baseball. And good for them as well. How's everybody doing? I hope your week is off to a great start. We've got plenty coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you. We're back with more, including Dylan Sin. Hey, welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle and Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Always a pleasure. Man, did you – I know it ended late, And it was later than I wanted to be awake, but did you watch that All-Star game last night?
Well, I did. I was putting the paper together last night. I was desperately hoping it would end in regulation innings so we could get the story in
There's
the paper.
Something called a deadline still these there days, people that indeed. You don't know about. Wow.
Yes, it was one of those where you're kind of like, all right, if it ends now, we can just get it to the printer with a story in there, and unfortunately it did not. That was very disappointing.
Even with technology, the deadline is still, has it gotten a little tighter? I mean, a little, not tighter, but a little more flexible?
A little bit. I mean, we have a printer in-house, which is very nice. That's not something a lot of newspapers
can say
these
days. Wow, that's unusual, man. That's unusual. Most papers today, people send their daggone papers, maybe even the Star, the Courier in Louisville, like off to someplace in Illinois to print the damn papers, bring them back for delivery. So if you ever wonder why and are frustrated why your local paper doesn't have the complete story of, say, last night's All-Star game, it's because of that. People like Dylan have to get the stories in, get them set up, get them edited, all that goes along with putting it together, as you just heard him say. Then it gets sent out to be printed. Then it has to be brought back and then dispersed. A lot going on there. I just don't understand how, like, Indiana newspapers can't get together and have like a regional printer or even whatever. But yeah, so that's some of the difficulties that the writers are under these days. But fortunately, there's always the websites for these newspapers as well that the subscribers get to go to, and those stories are always there at the website, at least fortunately. But so did you get to finish watching the game?
I did. Yes, it was terrific.
Was it as entertaining for you as it was for me? Because am I just being a goofy here? But I thought that was entertaining as hell.
No, I really did. I liked the home run derby at the end. I thought that what really struck me was how much the teams themselves were into it. They were having a blast out there, which was really fun. Dave Roberts has what, 3 World Series rings, and he's out there on the top step of the dugout. Very clearly invested in this thing. Yeah, he is having a ball. Like, to me, that was what kind of took it over the top for me, was how invested these guys were in it. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. Kyle Schwarber doing his thing was obviously great. But it was a lot of fun to me. I do think that when you play 9 full innings, you're running out of players who haven't played in the game, because obviously you're trying to get everyone in regulation innings. I think that's a pretty good way to settle it. It's funny. I cover, as everyone here knows, or a lot of people here know, I cover the Tin Caps in the Midwest League. They had an All-Star game in 2019 that ended in a home run derby, and that was an absolute ball. Fans loved that. I thought that was great too. So it was a moment to cover that. I really enjoyed it. So same kind of thing in the major leagues. Love that they're doing that.
And not only was the game was fun. I mean, the game was actually fun. You, Pete Alonso, I mentioned earlier before you joined us, I feel bad for Pete Alonso. In any other year, this dude is the All-Star MVP. And I was, even up to the end, I'm thinking, okay, co-MVPs. I think that a co-MVP would have been acceptable there. Not that I'm not super happy for Kyle Schwarber, but I mean, a 3-run home run in the game is pretty clutch and big time. All, you know, what Kyle did as well was uber clutch, but it's a lot easier to hit those ready-made, hey, you know, put the ball on the outside part of the plate for me. Yeah, no, give me another one of those. That's a little bit easier than in-game hitting a 3-run dinger to put your team up.
Yeah, just a little bit, but no, he went 3 for 3. I thought co-MVPs would have been just fine, you know, almost like a regulation innings MVP and a derby MVP kind of thing. That would have been pretty funny. But yeah, congratulations to Kyle Schwarber, Indiana Hoosier through and through, who went out there and did he was the only one of the 5 hitters to have home runs on all 3 of his swings. So good for him.
Absolutely. And it just adds to his mystique. Kyle Schwarber, since 2017, only one Major League Baseball player has hit more home runs than he has, and that's Aaron Judge, which I don't know if that should count because he's kind of like the Jolly Green Giant. He's almost in a different category of a human. But Schwarbs is headed, heading towards potential Hall of Fame conversation here, even though he is not, defensively known as a player, his offensive creds, he's won. He still only has the one World Series, right? They got upset with, he should have two. When the Phillies band, they got upset. They should have won that one. But he's played in multiple World Series, won a World Series, MVP of a National League All-Star game. That was his, I don't know, how many All-Star games is that for him now?
I think three or four. I can't remember exactly. I think it's three or four.
But yeah, and just his prowess, and it's not slowing down. So another year or two of this, and I think we're talking about the Hall of Fame conversation because, doing this one or two or three years is one thing, but he's been doing it since, 2015 or 16?
16. It was 15 was his debut. Yeah, because he got drafted in 14 and made his debut in 15. And then 16 was the year where he got hurt. In the second game of the season, tore his ACL, and everyone thought he was out for the season. Then he comes riding back in the World Series without having swung a bat in 6 months, basically, and gets a hit in his very first at-bat. Like that, it's not just that he won a World Series, it's that he contributed significantly to a World Series win despite having not played the entire season or playoffs to that point. Really, really cool. One of the great moments in World Series history when he comes up there just totally cold and gets a base hit in his first at bat back. So it really is an all-time baseball moment. And he's had several of those as a guy who just he seems to be a part of a lot of big moments. I think if he's going to end up being an edge case, which he probably is for the Hall of Fame, that might end up putting him over the top with a lot of voters.
You just hit it on the nail on the head, moments. How many different Schwarb moments can you think of going back to college down to Louisville in the I think it was the College World Series, but he still has the longest home run in the history of that stadium down there, Patterson Stadium, which was, I don't know if it was over the damn railroad tracks or not over there. There's railroad tracks that run behind their baseball stadium down there. But then Brian says he bounced a homer off the top of the scoreboard in Cleveland during the World Series. Was it Cleveland? They didn't play Cleveland in the World Series.
They did in 2016, but I think it was with the Cubs. But who did the Phillies play that year? Now I'm drawing a blank. But it was he also hit off the scoreboard with the Cubs in the 2015 playoffs against the Cardinals. One of the most majestic home runs in Wrigley Field history, where he must have been 450 feet off the top of the Miller Lite sign on the scoreboard.
How many different stadiums has he left his mark? See, that's the thing, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, he just hit one into McCovey Cove in Pittsburgh just a couple weeks ago. AT&T Park, excuse me, in San Francisco, where he's one of the few to hit all the way into the bay, so on the fly. So really, really, like, just one of the most powerful guys in the league. And even if he doesn't make the Hall of Fame, I think it's one of those things where, kind of ironically, because he's also an IU guy, but he's going to be remembered kind of like Big Clue, who is like, if he might not make the Hall of Fame, but if you were around and you watched him play, you just remember his, like, prodigious displays of power as a defining feature of baseball during the year
and without drugs.
That's right. Yeah, and he has done a lot of work on his body over the years too. It's like he is a lot slimmer than he was when he was at IU and has not sacrificed any of his power, which is really impressive.
Every time I see or hear the word dingers, I will always go back to the Little League World Series about 4 years ago. There was this little chubby kid. I can't remember his name. They were having all the kids introducing themselves, and I'm going to give him the name Ralph just because I can't remember it. But hi, my name's Ralph, and I hit dingers. That was his intro, man. I'm like going, oh my God, that's the coolest ever, this little kid. I'm like, boom. It was great. The only thing that might have been cooler than that was the tribute to Henry Hank Aaron. And if you miss that, it's giving me goosebumps right now just talking about it. The first thing I did when that thing ended and they went to commercial break is I reran it and watched it again. And I watched it one more time because it was one of the coolest things I have ever seen done in a stadium, period. This was a tribute that Major League Baseball did. The lights go out. I don't know if it was people with their phones on or not, but all the lights, it looked like it was purposely lit up like stars in the seats. And on the field, they had text of some of the words that were being seen that said that people could see everywhere, but they have overlays of the call of Hank Aaron when he's sitting on 714 home runs about to break the Babe Ruth's record. And you've got Vince Scully, who is the indomitable voice forever of baseball. I mean, you hear that voice, and it's just, you just want to sit back in a chair and listen to Vin talk about whatever he's talking about. And then they had whomever else they had talking, but they keep leading up to this pitch, and there it is. And there's the shot, and they send a firework out into left center field. And then they track him running around the bases. It was incredible. And that was just awesome.
An incredible moment. Absolutely. Really, really good that Major League Baseball did that. Let me ask you, Jim, are you old enough that you remember that happening in real time? Because it's kind of right on the borderline for you, isn't it?
Thank you for asking.
1974.
I always think those are kinds of things you think you remember because you've seen them so many times post that I doubt that I was watching when that happened. Sure. I probably saw highlights of it, but I was a little kid and I was like 9 years old. So I don't know. I remember it, but I think that's because the memory is you see it so many times that I saw that. Did I? Because was that on national TV?
That's kind of what I was wondering. Was this on national TV or were the only
because there was no there was no fans? Turner Network back then.
Right. Yeah. This was
Atlanta games.
Yeah, 1974. So it was a couple of years before Turner. Was this a nationally televised game? I wonder if because he broke it pretty soon. Like I think it was only a couple of games after he tied the record that he broke it. So I wonder if they tried to put a lot of those games on national TV until he broke it, but I don't know. I'd be curious to know what the broadcast situation was for that. Was it just fans in Atlanta that got to see that?
Very, very, I don't know. You would think that knowing what was going on, that maybe they were able to get far enough ahead, but if it's a weekday game, there were no weekday baseball games on TV back then.
That's true. Yeah.
So, but with Vin Scully calling the game, I'm thinking, okay, it's either a national game, national TV game, or they're playing the Dodgers because he was the voice of the Dodgers on top of what he did on his national TV work. So it was one of the two. Brian says it was on national TV with Kurt Gowdy. Well, I didn't hear Kurt Gowdy, unless maybe he was the other voice, but I heard Vin Scully. Is that who you heard? That was Vin.
Well, they were playing the Dodgers. So, because Al Downing pitched for the Dodgers in 1974, okay. As I'm looking at it, Downing was the one who gave up the home run.
There you go.
They were playing
the Dodgers. Vin Scully was doing the radio broadcast for the Dodgers. Here we go. And then it was on national. Perfect. So it was on national TV. Thank you, Mike and Brian. Appreciate that. Five says a lot of
that is fast. That is fascinating to me.
Isn't it crazy? One of the greatest moments. I'm going to be honest with you. I still consider him the home run king. I'm sorry, sure. But I don't know if I'm old school or what, but Bonds, when did you start? Yeah, he was hitting home runs, but when did you start getting that big fat head? When did you start start juicing? You started juicing for a reason. And so that was that end of that era of the steroid era. And I'm like, man, you know what? Not only did Hank Aaron do it clean, I don't think he hit more than 50 home runs in a season.
No, he didn't. It was just 45 every year, over and over and over again for 22, 23 years. He was just a metronome, the most consistent.
You know how many times he made the All-Star team, people, you have any idea how many times that Hank Aaron was an All-Star? 25 time All-Star. You want to talk about a record that won't even come close to being broken. A 25-time Major League Baseball All-Star and one of the great guys, period. But just, he was the model of consistency. Wow. Yeah. So, yeah.
And you can even see it in the clip of him setting the record, which was not – he's also Fred. He is also third in hits. People forget that too. Third in hits all time with 3,700.
One of only two players to have the 700 home runs and 3,000 hits. I noticed since they didn't mention the other player, I'm going to guess it's Barry Bonds.
I don't think Barry Bonds had 3,000 hits. I think it's Albert Pujols. Did Albert Pujols get 3,000?
Who also got caught up in that steroid era, right?
Just a little bit.
Right? You see, there, but doesn't that suck? You're like, okay, you could have done 80, 90% of great stuff, but you add that to the 10% and you start putting those question marks up there.
Yeah. But no, the consistency is almost evident in the swing that broke the record. It's just a little flick of the wrist. There's nothing fancy at all about it. It really is just it was outstanding, and just the way he was able to swing. I'm trying to remember who the pitcher who was that said it, but it was basically the quote that I always like is some pitcher. Forgive me for not being able to remember it now, but said trying to sneak a fastball past Hank Aaron is like trying to sneak the sun past a chicken.
That's great. And last night when the National League was up and they brought in Rodriguez from the Giants, he comes in throwing this nasty slider. I was like, oh God, that thing's horrible to try to hit. But then he throws up a big old fat plate of cheese to I can't remember the guy who was at the plate who just crushed that thing and sent it to the moon. I'm like, man, you just threw a big fat plate of cheese right down the middle. And he said, I was swinging at the next pitch no matter what. So if he should have just thrown another slider, they wouldn't have got those three runs. But, man, it was just a fun game to watch. If you're my age, when you were a kid, baseball was huge, huge part of your life. Because it was such a different game. You knew every player on your team because they were there for years and years. I've seen in the last few days talking about the rivalry between the Yankees and the Dodgers. And you'd see Steve Garvey, first baseman for like 15 years for this team. And then Steve Yeager, the catcher, 12 years for this team. I'm like, You don't see that. It's nuts. All these guys were with these teams for a decade. And you got to grow up with that. And I loved it. And it that's what kind of kept you engaged to me. But oh well. But it was fun last night. It kind of took you back. I'm not going to lie. I can't wait to talk to Zach Osterman. He's an Atlanta guy. I'm sure he loved the heck out of that last night.
By the way, heck of a showcase for Atlanta, by the way. Like, it was, the stadium looked pristine. It was beautiful down there.
Yeah, it looked great. And it was a fun night. Fun night all the way around for sure. And see, IU officially reinstates the Bison as its mascot. They did not have the Bison down there at the Hall of Fame game, but he will be at Indiana's first football game against Old Dominion on August 30th. It seemed like that thing started gaining momentum, and it was like you could tell, all right, it's coming this time. It has had a life of its own before. It has come and gone. And now they're bringing it back for another time. The only thing that I just kind of laugh at, because I think it's a great mascot, because if you travel around the state of Indiana, you will see little statues of bison all over the place, just at a restaurant, at this, that. I mean, they're everywhere. But people already ask, well, what's a Hoosier? Well, what the hell you think they're going to do now? It's like, what the hell does a bison have to do with a Hoosier, and what's a Hoosier? So it's just going to increase their questions.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it makes sense. You know, the bison used to be all over Indiana and all of that. Like, it makes sense as a state, as an animal representation of the state. I do think that is going to be funny, though, is like what people outside the state, people are going to ask, what does this have to do with it? Kind of like with Alabama, where people ask, what does an elephant have to do with the Crimson Tide? But it's become an indelible part of the Alabama experience, where it's shaking its trunk on the sideline after a good play. So I am excited for the Bison. I think it's going to be a lot of fun seeing it out there for the first time on August 30th. Hopefully, maybe walking through the tailgate and things like that, getting a pretty close to sold out crowd pumped up. I'm fascinated to see what the crowd is like for that Old Dominion game, because obviously last year it took a little bit for the crowds to kind of ramp up, right? This year, coming off that season where you go to and you make the playoff, you'd like to think that hopefully the crowd is going to be pretty big right away. So we'll see, and hopefully the Bison will have something to pump up right away.
It's a 2:30 kickoff, so there's a slight advantage that will incentivize some people. Hey, you've got time to tailgate. Now, the second game is a noon game against Kennesaw State, which is like playing Bloomington North High School, and that one I'm like, yeah, are those people going from Fort Wayne going to come down, you know, make that 3-hour drive for a noon kickoff against Kennesaw State, or you know, drive up from Evansville for that? So that's, you're going to wonder. And then worse yet is Indiana State, which that's a Friday night game, and so you've got some high school conflict there, and I don't know what that's going to be like, but I am going to be curious as well, because the upper level football programs bring in the crowds even for the crap games.
Yeah, and IU didn't really do that last year. Remember, like, Cignetti had to say, hey, can we get some more people in there after they beat FIU to start the season. Obviously, by the middle of the year, when they beat Nebraska and they were beating Washington, and game day was coming to town, and then Michigan and Purdue, obviously the crowds were huge and they were boisterous. And it just took a little while, right? How much of that is going to carry over? Because I do think that is the mark of a program on the rise, is how much is your crowd ready to go right from the jump? And I think there'll be a pretty good crowd for at least the Old Dominion game. I don't know about Kennesaw State. I certainly don't know about Indiana State on a Friday night. But Old Dominion, I think, should be a pretty big crowd, because you're going to have a pretty big celebration of everything that went on last year. There's probably, in addition to the Bison, there's probably going to be a whole lot of different things where they present a college football playoff kind of ceremony or something like that. And I do think there'll be a lot of fun stuff going on. I'm sure the administration.
Don't forget the towels.
That's right. the administration has done a really good job last season, and I think it will continue, of making it a game day experience that matters to the fans, that really helps them connect with the team and with the program. And so I'm excited to see what they do for the home opener coming off a season where you went to the playoff. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Dylan Sen from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette with us here at Indiana Sports Beat Radio, back with more right after these messages. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio here on this Wednesday. You made it to the halfway point. Dylan Sen from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette is with us, and a lot's going on. It is, while this should be a slow time, it ain't. Pardon the slang, but no, it ain't. You've got recruiting, which is in full bore, straight ahead right now. Basketball, the coaching staffs are out, these live evaluation periods. You've got EYBL going on, 3SSB going on, the Peach Jam that'll happen, all that stuff that is about to unfold next week. Big Ten Football Media Days in Las Vegas. Two weeks after that, Indiana basketball is in Puerto Rico, playing multiple games. The TBT starts on
Saturday.
So, yeah. Am I missing anything in this slow time?
Yeah. I mean, you said football media day. We just had the MLB draft, which had a couple of Hoosiers drafted. Yeah, basically a lot going on, and I was going to Puerto Rico pretty soon. It really is. It's a pretty packed time here. Jim, I want to know: are you going to make the trek all the way out to Las Vegas for Big Ten Media Day?
No, I had hoped to, but I just decided, you know, with the time change, it's just not conducive to doing the show. When we do the show, it's not. We would not be able to get any guests on at least from out there. So I'm like, it's pointless to be out there for me. The Hoosier.com will be out there in mass.
Okay.
But this will be my first Miss Media Days in, I don't know, maybe 8 years. But wow. It's just only because it's just not conducive to working. Now we'll be in Puerto Rico for those games, because same time, so that helps everything, makes it a lot better. And unfortunately, though, not going to, but because it would have been only for one day to go out there, and it just doesn't make sense to do this show. Now, if I was just going out to cover it, yeah, I would still do that.
Sure, absolutely, yeah, you're not gonna make a special trip out there just to, you know, take in the sights of Las Vegas.
No, I've had all of the Sin City I need in my lifetime, but not that I don't like it going out there, and I'm sure I will be back. It's not enough to draw me in just for the visit.
But yeah, I am not, unfortunately. I have to be here to do other things, because we have a lot. That's the thing, is we have a lot going on in Fort Wayne around this time of year as well. So this is when they have a whole bunch of, like, the city golf tournament is going on. We have the city swim meet. We have a whole bunch of things that are happening in the city. And of course the Tin Caps are still playing and getting into a pennant chase. So it's a lot for me. We have to save, we have to make sure that we have the cash for future trips, possibly for a college football playoff, possibly for NCAA tournament. So it's one of those things where you can see a lot of it. They do a good job of posting transcripts online and things like that. Although, they almost hamstring themselves because they do too good of a job, right? I don't want them to stop doing it, but it does make it so that attendance is less. It's less something that you need to be there. On top of that, so I will not be there this year, but I'm hoping everyone that does go out there has a lot of fun. I'm sure that the IU beat will have a good time.
Well, I will say that a couple of years ago when they had the men's basketball media days in Minnesota for that first time, I was the only IU media representative there. And that's saying something, because IU has the biggest media contingent of any school in the Big Ten. So with it being Las Vegas, that'll probably be different. And with football, that'll be a little different, because of the buzz around Indiana and
So I don't expect that to be the case for football this year, especially with an opportunity to go to Vegas. So we shall see. But I'm interested to see what's going to go on. What everybody, of course, in the Big Ten has, you know, the Fave Four, as I will call them, the Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon at the top. And that's going to remain that way until somebody does something about it. Now, can Illinois, can Indiana, can they surpass one of those four teams? Because to get into the college football playoff, that's what you're going to have to do. Michigan was not in that group last year. Indiana was in that group. So somebody's going to have to knock one of those guys out. Indiana plays Penn State and Oregon, so they're going to have their opportunity against both of those teams. Unfortunately for Indiana, both of those games are on the road. If Indiana were to go 10-2 with their losses to Oregon and Penn State, both on the road, of course, which would mean they have a win at Iowa and a win over a ranked Illinois team, well, do you think that'll be good enough to get them back to the CFP?
I think so. Yeah, I think it would. I think they would probably be a 10 or 11 seed would be my guess in that scenario. Obviously, so much of it depends on what goes on elsewhere. So much of it depends on how they play in those games against Penn State and Oregon. Do they look like they belong in the same field? But I do think that would probably be enough because you do have the win over Illinois. Assuming Illinois is the 8-4, 9-3 team that we believe they're going to be, assuming that Iowa is a competent team, which they almost always are, I do think that those two are better than basically any win IU had last year, and it would make them a lot more legitimate in the eyes of a lot of people. And so I do think that would be enough. And so that kind of sets up those games, which are early in the season, right? They're very important games. If you come out of that stretch, you have Illinois, Iowa, Oregon, back to back to back, right? If you come out of that stretch like 4-5-1 or 4-2, you feel pretty good about where you are in terms of how the rest of the season is going to go. So I'm excited to see that because it is one of those things where they have a ramp up to the start of the Big Ten season. They have the three games that people expect them to win, and they should win. So you're going to start 3-0, but then the really important games start immediately, right? There's no like 6-week ramp up to facing Ohio State and Michigan. It just goes. You face Illinois to start the Big Ten season. It is maybe the biggest game of the season for you in terms of how far can you go. And I'm really fascinated by that. When you get it at home, if Illinois is undefeated, there's a decent chance that Big Noon Saturday is going to be there for that one. So I'm really excited for that. And I think it's going to be kind of a jarring, like, hey, we're 3-0. We haven't really played anybody. Let's see what happens. And now you're playing a really good team. So I'm interested in that.
Yeah, we will find out. So it certainly looks forward. You know, there's a discussion too about football and the Big Ten, the ACC. I was talking about this yesterday. Greg Sankey says that the two have different views on the CFP at the moment. Well, it basically comes down to the Big Ten says, well, why don't you all play 9 games and we'll talk about the model that you guys would like to present. But until you get to 9 games, we're not at that talking stage yet. I mean, We'll pretend that we're at that talking stage, but we're not at that talking stage until you get to 9 games. And it's not just the SEC, it's also the ACC. Got to get everybody on the same page. The SEC wants everything their way, how they want it, how they think it suits them best. And you know what? Greg Sankey said that when you have the kind of power that these two organizations have, you have to use it wisely. Okay, well, put your money where your mouth is. Get to 9 games. Now, if you want to make that 9th game a cross-sectional matchup between interconference, that would be cool. But you got to play. It's either 8 conference games and a required cross game against the Big Ten. But this cannot be. This has to be scheduled with. And this is even harder to do in this day and age because of the transfer portal. You don't know what a team is really like until the season, although you're going to expect certain things from the upper level teams. Yeah. But I don't think that I don't know that the Big Ten is as deep as the SEC. I think that they may be better at the top, but not as deep.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is the SEC, a lot of the teams in the SEC have a non-conference game against a rival that's in the ACC or the Big 12 or something like that. Like, South Carolina plays Clemson, right? They play Clemson every year. Florida plays Florida State every year. Sometimes they play Miami, too, which they're doing both this year. Georgia plays Georgia Tech every year, right? So they're playing the idea is they're playing a ninth Power 5 game or Power Conference game. It's just not in the SEC. But on top of that, not all of the SEC's teams play one of those games, right? Like Texas and Oklahoma play, but that's an in-conference game, right? So the schedule is unbalanced. They don't want to make Georgia or Florida or South Carolina play a 10th Power 5 game when sometimes the Big Ten is only playing nine because they don't play anyone outside of conference. It's a whole mess. They've gone around and around and around on it for basically decades at this point with the SEC trying to get to eight or nine. And they're kind of at an impasse right now. And the other part of it is they're at odds over what they want. If you're going to go to 16 teams, which is kind of the consensus of where they seem like they want to go, is 16 teams for the playoff. How do you do that format? The SEC wants what we've had this past couple of years, where you have the five conference champions, the four power conference champions, and a group of five one, and then 11 at-large bids, just like whoever else, we want 11. The Big Ten wants these guaranteed spots where the Big Ten gets four and the SEC gets four and the Big 12 gets two and the ACC gets two and then the G5 gets one and then there's three at-large spots up for grabs. And the SEC is like, no, why would we do that? Just play it out and whoever gets in, right? And the Big Ten is like, no, you should do it this way like the NFL does with conferences, where the NFC gets this many and the AFC gets this many. We go with that. And so they're at a big impasse over that right now. And Tony Petitti, I don't think, is happy with Greg Sankey, because originally Greg Sankey was on board with the automatic bids, the 4+4+2+2, and then he kind of backed off. He changed his mind.
It was probably their it was almost their idea originally. They were wanting the guarantee.
They were the first ones to float it, if I remember. And Petitti was on board, at least behind the scenes, and then they were on board publicly. And then the SEC backed out. And the Big Ten feels like the SEC kind of basically turned on them in this case. And so they're not happy about it. And so they're kind of fighting it out right now. And the two giants in the room trying to figure out what to do. Because the Big Ten's plan is basically, okay, we're going to have these automatic bids. And then what we're going to do is on Conference Championship Sunday, you're going to have not only the Conference Championship, but you're going to have like the third place team play the fourth place team. And the fifth place team play the sixth place team, or three versus six and four versus five within your conference. And that's how you're going to determine the third and fourth spots that go automatically to your league. You're going to have an extra 13th game for more teams than just the top two in your conference. It's pretty convoluted, frankly. If we have to pick between the SEC's version and the Big Ten's version, I'm picking the SEC's version, where it's just five conference champs and 11 auto bids. I think that, or 11, at-large bids, I think that's fine. Frankly, the Big Ten's version is very convoluted, but it does give you extra revenue with that 13th game. I don't know. I don't know if we need all that. Just have the committee pick. They did fine last year. The SEC was mad, but who cares? They did fine. Just let the committee pick. It's usually pretty obvious who's going to be in, and there's maybe some quibbling over the 15th and 16th team. I think it's fine. I think 5 versus 11 would be just fine. Heck, I think 5 plus 7 is what we have right now is just fine. I have no problem with the 12 team that we have. I thought it worked well. Everyone's like, all right, what's the next step? Why? 12 is fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm up against to take a break, but if you got a few more minutes, we'll stick around for a little short segment. Great, but sure. If not, get a go. But hey, we've got more coming up. The great Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette is with us, back with more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, with Jim Coyle on this Wednesday. Glad to have you with us. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette joining in. We're talking about scheduling with the Big Ten, SEC, college football playoffs at all. Indiana, of course, recently canceling a series with Virginia that had been scheduled, and that is to be partly because there had been a rule that you they were requiring each team to play a Power Four conference opponent, but they're phasing that out. So you saw Indiana cancel the series with Louisville, and now they're have canceled the series with Virginia. That's going to cost them $500,000, which, yeah, that sounds like a lot, but they actually get a home game instead. So they get to make that money back there. And looking forward, now next season, they play Colorado State at home, and that's not exactly a cream puff. And, you know, they're not a team that you're expect to see in the CFP or anything, but they gave Colorado a run here last year when we saw them play. Western Kentucky is on the schedule. A dangerous team. We've seen that before. They still need to add a game for next season. But then the following season, you're back to Kennesaw State, Indiana State, and UMass. So there's that. But you look at the home games next year alone, you've got Ohio State and USC that you have to play at home. And then you also are playing Nebraska and Michigan. So healthy schedule.
Yeah.
Looking forward to those games.
Here's the thing, and I know some people are upset that they're not playing a tougher schedule. I get it. I do. Here is the reality, and I think that this is – it's tough for people to hear because they're coming off a college football playoff berth. The modal season for Indiana, the season that is going to happen most often, even under Kurt Cignetti, is a season where where 8 wins is going to be a good season. Right now, I'm not saying that's for this year because I do think they are a very good team this year and they have four All Americans back and what have you. But you want to maximize your chances of making a bowl game because you are Indiana and you want to be able to say, hey, we made a bowl game every year. Right, like that is still a reasonable goal for Indiana football, despite the fact that Kurt Cignetti is the coach, despite the fact that they pour all this money into the program. For now, the number one goal every year is still make a bowl game. Right, like we are 2 years removed from everyone saying, "Hey, bowl game," and that's good. Right, you are not fighting for the college football playoff every single season if you are Indiana football, despite the fact that they are desperately trying to level up and spending the money to do it. But, and of course, Kurt Cignetti would never say any of this, but that's what these moves suggest, is we are trying to bank wins in the non-conference to go in and then say, all right, we only need 3 of them in the Big Ten to get to a bowl game. And you want to, as the bare minimum, get to a bowl game every year, because not getting to one can really stunt your growth as a program. It's going to dampen enthusiasm, dampen recruiting momentum, all of that. You want to be, as a bare minimum, get to a bowl game. And so I think that is what they're doing here, is making sure you get 3 wins in the non-con as easily and painlessly as possible. I think that is the goal here.
And I agree. And if you look at the schedule, in all fairness, 12 games. So Illinois at home, at Iowa, at Oregon, at Penn State, there's one third 25% of your schedule right there. That's 33. A third of your schedule. One third of your schedule. Those are pretty damn tough games with most of them on the road. So that's an entire third. Another third, you can say, are cupcakes. And then you've got a third that could and should be toss-up games, because you don't know what Michigan State's going to be like year to year. You don't know what UCLA is going to be like year to year, or a team like Wisconsin right now. It's up to them to get their deal going. But what happens is, if all of a sudden, you know, they bring in just a great class, and now that adds to that game. You only have so much control over how good teams are that are on your schedule because of how teams change now. So I don't have a problem with it. They will always have tough games. You're always going to have games against an Oregon, a Penn State, a Michigan, an Ohio State, or some iteration of that. And so I have no issue with their schedule at the moment. I have no issue with the cupcakes early on. You've got a 9-game conference schedule. You're going to get tested all you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, with the top four in the Big Ten, you got Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. You're going to play at least two or three of those every single year, right? Last year it was kind of a weird year because they played two of them and Ohio and Michigan was down. So Ohio State was really the only that was the thing with the schedule last year, was that it wasn't just that they went 11-1. It was they didn't really have a game against a team ranked anywhere between 5 and 50 in the country. It was a very odd, they didn't play anyone who was pretty good. They played the best team in the country or a team that was no good. It was really odd. And it was not something that's going to happen again. You are going to have at least 2 to 3 games every year against top 15 opponents just about every season in the Big Ten. It is going to happen. And they will have that this year, and they will have it almost every year going forward. Last year was kind of a fluke in terms of just the way the schedule shook out. Nothing Indiana could have done about it. That's just how it worked out.
How crazy is it that we are having, in earnest, a intense conversation about how well Indiana football is going to be doing, expected to be doing, and Indiana basketball, we're like, okay, let's wait and see. I'm not sure. It's not that I have doubts about Derrick DeVries. It's just this first year, boy, my best advice to Indiana fans would just be low expectations. Low expectations for this season. Let's see what you might see things that surprisingly surprise you. But you got to go in with low expectations in this first season.
Yeah, it is really funny. To me, what my again, predictions are silly. We have no idea how this season is gonna play out. We have no idea how these guys are gonna gel. But I don't think I would not be surprised at all if they turned over the entire coaching staff. They turned over the entire roster. There's not a single player back. And they end up winning almost the exact same amount of games. They win 18, 19, 20 games. And it's like, well, we're on the bubble again. It is the exact same thing as it was last year. That doesn't mean that it's going to be the same thing going forward. I think they're going to get better as they go on here under Coach DeVries. But it is kind of funny that I think that, to me, is a really realistic outcome, is they do everything. They turn over the entire program and win the exact same number of games.
Yeah, and so it's going to be amazing to see how that works out. We're only a few weeks away from Puerto Rico and Indiana getting their first test and getting our first eyes on this team. And I think it's going to be a good test against that Serbian team.
Yeah, absolutely. Aleksa Ristić playing against some of his countrymen, which should be a lot of fun for him. I think it's going to be it's going to be a chance to see these guys on the court, which is not something just have them together. How do they respond in a situation where you're not just playing against guys you've seen in practice for weeks now, you're playing against an actual team. How does he manage the minutes? Obviously, you're not going to manage it like you would during a regular season game or even an exhibition game right before the season, but how is he divvying up the minutes? Who starts? Who is first off the bench? Who are the guys that are really going to contribute? We're going to get our first good look at that, because there's so many guys, it's like, we don't really know exactly. We can get some glimpses from what they put on social media and all of this, but we really don't know what the rotation is going to look like beyond probably Tucker DeVries is going to start, and probably Lamar Wilkerson is going to start, and probably Reed Bailey is going to start. And beyond that, I don't know. You could tell me basically anything, and I would believe you. I'm high on Tayton Conerway. I've been on record as saying I think he's the truth. But beyond that, we don't know. You know, we're going to see. And I think that is why that those games in Puerto Rico are so interesting to me, because it's so much of what does this team even look like on the court together?
Yeah, and that's the thing. The Serbian team, that's a team that has played together. Some of those guys could have been playing together for how long?
Yeah, years, right? Like is it a professional team? It's like an all-star team of some kind, right? Well, it's the Puerto Rican all-star team, but it's like a Serbian professional team, right? So they play together.
Yeah.
They know each other. So it is, and these are grown men. They're not guys they're not 17, 18-year-olds. So we're going to see. I'm interested.
Yeah, it'll look forward to it, man. Are you making – I'm assuming, yeah, that's too long for that's a difficult thing to cover. That's a difficult thing for me to cover as well. That's a long time to be gone down there. It's very expensive, but that's the only way to get coverage, because there no television. No, these games right now are not being broadcast.
No, and that was it was the same kind of thing when they went to the Bahamas in Mike Woodson's first year. It was like you have to kind of watch the box score and listen to the post-game interviews and just kind of see what you can glean if you're not there. And that's why it's the people who are there, they're going to have a really important job, kind of like old school sports writers where there was nothing on TV. It's like, all right, report. Tell me what you think. Give me some analysis. Let's see what happens.
So what are your thoughts for the upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested, right? Like it is one of those things where, again, I think it's Reed Bailey. I think it's Lamar Wilkerson. I think it's Tucker DeVries at probably in the starting lineup. I can't imagine any of those guys would not start. And then what does the rest of the backcourt look like, right? Tayton Conaway, I think, is a very, very good defensive player. There's questions about his shooting, but he is one of the better passers in the country. Same is Connor Enright. Can he start next to Tayton Conaway? I don't know. Can you have both of those guys on the court together at the same time? I don't know. We'll see. And then what does the front court depth look like? Because to me, that's the question, right? Is Sam Alexis a guy you can give 20 minutes a game to and have him perform? I don't know. Well, who is the backup for? And we haven't really talked about this today, but Luke Goody was denied his waiver, right? Like I think we kind of thought that was coming after a certain point, but he probably would have been the main backup four behind Tucker DeVries, I think. So how is Tucker DeVries a good enough rebounder to play the four and give you five or six a night? I don't know. Like he's a big guy. I think he's tough and he's strong, but can he go out there and be a Big Ten level rebounder? I don't know. We'll see. So there's a lot of questions about this team that to me are we'll start to learn in Puerto Rico. And that's part of the reason I think that Puerto Rico is so big, just to see what the rotations even nominally look like. Even if he's trying to get everyone in the game, what do the rotations look like at the start?
With both Anthony Leal and Lou Goody getting their waivers denied, is this a good thing, bad thing? Neither. Somewhat, you know, some fans are torn. Like they just kind of want to move forward, period, with a whole new regime. And I honestly, I don't know where minutes for Luke Goody would have come from, because there's so many guys that are basically in that same bucket of, you know, 6'5", 6'7", 6'. Or so wing players. It just seems like they have got a six pack of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think Luke, first of all, you can't have enough shooters, right? So I think Luke Goody especially would have been extremely valuable for this team. I think he probably would have played a good 15, 20 minutes a game, because he is the only, like, you talk about having all those guys on the wing. Outside of Tucker DeVries, no one's proven, right? Like they're all coming up from the lower level. We don't know how good any of them are at the Big Ten level. We know Luke Goody can play in the Big Ten. So I think that is a pretty significant decision. Obviously, we kind of knew it was coming after a while, but it is a significant decision for Luke Goody that his waiver was denied, because that does erode your front court depth. I think he probably would have been the main backup for at least to me. I think that probably would have been my plan, because he played very well at the end of last season, if you recall. So I think that frankly, I don't understand the people who want to be like, I want a clean break. They're Indiana guys, right? Like, especially Leal and Goody. Like, Leal was in the program for 5 years. He was never anything but a great ambassador for the program.
I'm going to answer that question right now. It doesn't have so much to do with Anthony Leal, and it has more to do with Luke Goody. I think Luke just kind of rubbed some people the wrong way with some comments that they may have taken the wrong way. And I'm like, you know, get over that stuff, man. You can't hold those kind of grudges. I'm like, gee whiz, they're young guys. They're under a lot of pressure. You think I haven't said something I wish I had back? Man, I don't have, you know, I've only got one microphone in my face, much less having 10 stuck in your face at the same time. So, you know, give them a break, get off of it, let it go. What's up next for you, brother?
Yep, I am continuing my series on kind of roster resets for this year. We've already done all the basketball ones, IU, Purdue, Notre Dame, and football is coming up next. So I will have a Notre Dame roster reset in the paper on Saturday, continuing Tin Caps coverage all over Fort Wayne with local coverage as well. And then, of course, coverage of Indiana, Notre Dame, and Purdue fall camp football coming up here in just a couple weeks.
Yeah, amazing. It's here. Make sure you give him a follow, Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. If you're up in Fort Wayne area, be a subscriber. Appreciate you as always, my friend.
Absolutely, Jim. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Thank you, brother. We've got more coming up from Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. Zach Browning is going to join us next. We've got some basketball to talk about, some football recruiting to talk about, all that and more. Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle on this Wednesday. Zach Browning from thehoosier.com joining us now. And if you want to know what is going on with Indiana basketball, football, recruiting news, and other, you definitely need to be subscribed to thehoosier.com. It's $1 for the first month, 50% off for the entire first year. And it is chock full of content every day. There is no site out there, newspaper or otherwise, that is producing the content the Hoosier.com is, especially with the inside information from guys like Jamie Shaw and Joe Tipton, and the great work being done by Alec Lasley, Kyler Staley, and our guest Zach Browning, and Colin McMahon. I can't forget Colin, and Drew Rosenhaus is also just guys are killing it over there. Zach, first of all, great job.
Thank you, Jim. We appreciate it. We have put in a lot of work this summer. It's been a lot of fun covering a lot of Indiana football recruiting, basketball recruiting, football and basketball in general. We're having a good time over at thehoosier.com. You should come and join us.
Absolutely. And this is a busy, busy time. I said earlier, I go, man, this is supposed to be the slow time. I was able to take a kind of a week off. You can never take off, but for as much as you can. But even then, it's like I felt like it's you can't not stay connected, Harley, because right now in I still call it the AAU circuit. I don't think that that's really the what do you call it? The grassroots circuit? What do we call this?
AAU is still a term you can use. Grassroots, AAU, either of those two work.
Peach Jam underway down in North Augusta. You know what? The Peach Jam, they should be able to, there should be something worked into where the winner gets to go over and play Augusta or something. That would give you some incentive. But man, a ton of Indiana targets are here, but they're also over at the 3SSB because Indiana's basketball recruiting, I've got to give it up to Darren DeVries and his entire staff, whether it's Nick Norton or Drew Adams or Kenny Johnson, all those guys, they're beating the band. They're out there. They're at it. They are making their presence known. They are establishing really good relationships. And I'm not even going to talk about these guys yet, just starting with a guy that's already committed to Indiana. And that would be Prince Alexander Moody. Colin's got a piece in there talking about how he is really embracing becoming a Hoosier. Now, that's great because he's not from Indiana. He doesn't have an Indiana connection. And people have talked so much about this era of NIL and the me era. Well, that's why that is refreshing to see. He wants to play. He wants to be a member of the team. He wants to win. You know, the other stuff is going to come. I'm telling you, people, if you're an athlete, you want to compete. And if you want to compete, you want to win. The other stuff, it's already there. It's going to be there. That competitive drive is just innate. It's nature. It's, you know, losing sucks. Let's just be honest. To me, losing always sucked worse than winning felt good. And I would take that all day long. It just may sound stupid, but it's just, I think there's a lot of people that would agree that. But, and Prince Alexander Moody's kind of a ambassador right now for the new IU recruit.
Yeah, Jim, I have never seen a kid his age, let alone a basketball recruiter, let alone a recruit in general, this active on social media. He is awesome. He is literally responding to every single person that comments on any post that has tagged him in anything. He responds to all of them. And as you mentioned, this is all while he and Team Takeover are playing down in Peach Jam right now. So he will take his time in between games, in between sessions of Peach Jam, to respond to Indiana fans on Twitter. And he responds to all of them. You can at him, you can do whatever. He will respond to you on Twitter. He will respond to you.
Oh, don't say that. You're going to get the kid killed with the messages, man. They're going to just be blowing him up now.
He seems to enjoy it. He seems to enjoy it. He loves that interaction. He's, again, very active. He wants to be a Hoosier, and I think that's what stands out. And I think it's interesting because, as you mentioned, he doesn't have any Indiana connection. But it's also interesting because where did he develop that Indiana connection? The only way he would have developed that was on his visit. So I think it's curious to see and interesting to see how Darren DeVries and his staff have been able to communicate the history of IU and communicate what being a Hoosier means, despite only really being in Bloomington for 3 or 4 months at this point. So I think that's another interesting kind of aspect to this Prince Alexander Moody social media takeover that we've kind of seen over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm watching a video right now of him, of a block, not a shot, but a block this kid has. And this is not a 6'10" dude. This is just an athletic player. And this is the type of, and he's the type of player, and go to the Hoosier.com. You can catch all this stuff, but these are the type players Darren DeVries is going to bring in. I hate to not be able to be more, I don't want to say upbeat, but predictive for the fans for this season for Indiana basketball. I just don't know. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. I'll tell you more after Puerto Rico, but right now, no clue. I mean, an understanding. But the future, I think Indiana fans are going to be very happy because they're going to expand the type of roster. In addition to guys like Prince Alexander Moody, now you've got the big guy who, Ponder, who has now taken his list of schools down to 7, Indiana, one of those. Now, he is from Miami, and Miami is one of those 7. Getting him out of Miami may be difficult for 2 reasons. Number one, it's Miami. Number two, I forget that dude's name down there, but he's got an endless bankroll.
Yeah, Miami will be one of those schools that will be tough to beat there, but Indiana, it's good to be on those lists and just be on those lists. It gives you a fighting chance. Anything can happen if you get on those lists. Then you can get a guy in on a visit. Then you can kind of talk that money, talk the NIL numbers, and anything can happen at that point. So just getting on the lists is a good start. And you mentioned that Prince Alexander Moody block. That was on a dunk attempt somebody on Team Durant. That was a dunk attempt. He had 3 blocks Prince Alexander Moody did in that game. And I think at the college level, by the time he bulks up a little bit more, he'll probably be able to guard 1 through 4 at the college level. He's long, he's athletic, and if he's blocking shots like that, he'll be a great defender at the college level. But I think it's interesting. The number one thing that really stands out to me about Indiana and the recruiting stuff so far this summer on the basketball side of things is just the visibility. And I think that's probably the number one thing fans are happy with, is the fact that Darren DeVries is out there. You can go search on Twitter Darren DeVries and you can say, hey, Darren DeVries is at North Augusta today. Darren DeVries is at Rock Hill at 3SSB today. You can kind of go out and look at those things and see your head coach actually out there recruiting, actually out there watching kids play. And that's something I think that Indiana fans want to see, didn't necessarily see over the last handful of years. And I think that's probably what's stood out as the number one thing, at least from an Indiana perspective, so far this summer on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, and also while they did not get a typical big on this year's roster, Reed Bailey is going to fill that role more likely, maybe, depending on where he ends up out on the rotation. Ponder is one of those. He's a 7-foot beast. He looks like a mini Shaq already, just with his bulk. I mean, normally you see a 7-footer that's in high school and they remind you of Chet Holmgren. This dude reminds you of Shaq. I mean, where's the beef? Right there.
His nickname is actually the Big Show. It's Marcus Big Show Ponder. So that, he's 7 foot, and I think the latest measurement I think is around 290 pounds, 280 pounds. He is now he is pretty much Umar Balo's size as a 17-year-old kid. It's absurd. He averages around 13 rebounds a game on the EYBL circuit. He dunks with ferocity, and he's one of a number of Indiana targets at center in the 2026 class. Ponder's up there. Ethan Taylor is up there as well. Erfan Diane is up there as well. There will be a handful of targets. Indiana will look to get one of those centers in the 2026 class because, as you mentioned, not necessarily a designated seven-footer, a designated shot blocker rebounder on the 2025 roster. I'm not sure that's necessarily out of desire. I'm sure Darren DeVries would love to have one of those 7 foot rim protecting shot blockers on the team this year. But I think in 2026, you're looking at one of those kids, whether it's Taylor, Diane, Ponder, another name, one of those 7 foot kind of shot blocking rim protectors. Indiana's going to look to pursue a couple of those guys pretty hard.
Yeah, I love how Ponder describes his game. He describes it as a big force. Pure and simple. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty good because I'm going to have to agree with that. I mean, he is just a big, and he's hard. This is a high school kid. And like you mentioned, getting him not so much more muscle, more strength, a little leaner, probably more, not that he has fat on him, but boy, they get you to college and they lean you down. They get you, you're more muscle, less body fat, which allows you to become more athletic, better foot movement, which is probably the biggest adjustment from high school to college, foot movement for these big guys. But the dude is, he's going to be someone that if you're playing against, you're going to know it.
Yeah, you're going to feel it for sure. He is, again, averaging a pretty much a double-double on the EYBL circuit. He's the best rebounder on the EYBL circuit. I think last live period, so last weekend, the first live period of July, he had 19 offensive rebounds across four games. That's pretty special. He is big. He's a force. He's tough to handle down low. And it's not necessarily just that he's bigger and stronger than everybody. He is. But he's got some skill. There's good footwork there. There's skilled work there. He's a good screener. It's not just that he's bigger than everybody else. He's got some skill in there as well.
And Indiana is, as far as recruiting, it's not just the 2026 class they have attacked hard. The 2027 class, many offers out. They've got a visit scheduled with four-star guard Davian Thompson. And all of these guys are targeting. They're upper-level players, four-stars, five-star guys. And while the star does not define a player, does not mean you, that can't be incorrect here and there sometimes. Generally, it's within the ball game. But more importantly, coaches, good coaches, they see talent and they see potential. Although falling back to Kurt Cignetti, production over potential, but this is recruiting. I'm impressed with the amount of recruiting that Indiana's doing. They are not, they obviously are not going to be relying on the transfer portal. And it just seems like a kind of a breath of fresh air. I think Indiana fans enjoy the hunt of these players.
You do. Recruiting, high school recruiting is still the backbone, I guess you could say, of building a college program. You need those 3-4 year type of guys. You need the Trent Sisleys. You need the Prince Alexander Moody's, who also figures to be kind of a multi-year guy at the college level. You get those guys on campus, you recruit those guys, and then you retain them. That's kind of how you build the foundation of a college program. Then you use the transfer portal as it was initially intended to be used and kind of fill in and add some pieces here and there, fill in the needs, things like that. But you have to still recruit at the high school level. And I think that's probably why we're going to see a bigger high school class here for Darren DeVries in Indiana in this offseason. Probably four guys will be taken out of the high school ranks. And you need that because you need guys to build that foundational level. You need the youth. You need the guys that will be with you for 3-4 years. You know you have to retain them. But like I said, you need a guy like Trent Sisley. You need a guy like Lex Aristic. He'll probably be a multi-year guy. Prince Alexander Moody, the same. So it'll probably be a healthy mix in this 2026 class of highly touted, potentially one and done, maybe two and done type of guys, those top 25, top 30 ranked players in the 26th class. Then you've got Prince Alexander Moody, who's ranked more towards the number 100 mark. You've got some other guys that are maybe in that 80 to 90 to 100 mark where Trent Sisley was ranked. So you need a healthy mix of both, but you definitely cannot survive, especially with the kind of COVID years kind of flowing out and the uncertainty of just how the transfer portal works and eligibility and waivers and all things like that. You need those guys that you have on your roster that you can trust will be an Indiana Hoosier for 2, 3, 4 years at some points.
Well, Davian Thompson will be coming to Bloomington to visit later this month. And Kenny Johnson was courtside in North Augusta to watch Thompson score 22 points and 4 assists in a tightly contested 80-76 win over Indiana Heat against future or fellow IU target Isaiah Hill during the Nike EYBL session 4. So every one of these guys are kind of tied together as far as their recruiting. And I think that that is also going to bode well for Indiana. This recruiting previously was just a hodgepodge, it seemed like, of things thrown together. Last year, more so than ever, you just had a bunch of stuff thrown together with no new plan. It was the same old plan without the guys to be able to do the things needed done. And right now you see all these guards and wings that Darren DeVries is targeting. Well, that's because he needs ball handling, distribution, and shooting. Those three things. Those things weren't really addressed previously. That's the core. Not that a big guy doesn't help, but these other things are just have been more difficult for Indiana. They have not shot the ball well in years. So Indiana fans are going to love, if nothing else, the shooting from these Indiana teams. And I think just because of that, they're probably going to put themselves in better position in some games than most people might think.
You can also tell the importance of the guard spot for Darren DeVries and the kind of system he runs or is going to want to run at IU. You can tell the importance and how much that will rely on guards because of not only what he's gotten out of the transfer portal, Tayton Conaway, one of the top-ish guards in the transfer portal, the Sun Belt Player of the Year. He prioritized talent. He prioritized production and experience at the guard spot out of the transfer portal. But also, if you look at the 2026 prospects, 2027 as well, the guards specifically that DeVries is targeting, they're all top 25 guards. They're all top 30 guards. You look at in 2026, Tay Kinney, Darren Rippey, Jordan Smith. Those are all top 25 guards. Darren DeVries knows he needs talent. If you are recruiting number 100 ranked guard, let's take Prince Alexander Moody, for example. You know you're going to get a good solid 2-3 years out of Prince Alexander Moody. You know he's going to be great when he steps on campus in Bloomington, but he's not a guy that is a Jalen Hood-Schifino type guy for these Indiana fans. He's probably not a guy that's going to come out, compete for Big Ten Freshman of the Year, compete for a ton of minutes as a freshman. Then you look at a guy like Tay Kinney, Jordan Smith, Darren Rippey, who Indiana's all prioritizing in the 2026 class. Those guys, they'd compete, they'd come in, they'd be one of the top-ranked freshmen in the entire Big Ten Conference. They'd compete for that Big Ten Freshman of the Year. They'd get a lot of minutes early. Those are the types of guys you need at the guard spot. Darren DeVries wants at the guard spot. In 2027, Davion Thompson. You look at guys like LJ Smith in that 2027 class. Talent at guard is important. You can't just bring in the bodies at guard. Darren DeVries isn't looking for just a three-star. No offense to the three-stars out there, but Darren DeVries isn't looking for a three-star, a top 150 ranked point guard, somebody that can come in, run the offense decently well out of the high school ranks. Darren DeVries wants a top 25 guy to come run the point guard spot for Indiana, whether it's 1 year, whether it's 2 years, however many years they're in Bloomington. Darren DeVries is aiming for the stars. He's shooting high with these guards because he knows he wants and he needs talent at that guard spot.
We're going to take a quick break talking basketball now. We'll continue that afterwards, but also plenty of football as Zach has been outwardly covering everything going on the football side of things as well. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle right after these messages.
Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle on this Wednesday. Zach Browning from thehoosier.com joining me now. Make sure you're a subscriber. $1 for your first month, 50% off the entire first year. No site is providing the coverage that thehoosier.com with On3 is now providing. Constant breaking news, Joe Tipton, Jamie Shaw, all live down at all the basketball action that's going on, in addition to our guests currently, Zach Browning, Alec Lasley, and Kyler Staley, as well as football coverage. Nobody is putting out the content that Hoosier.com is. They are killing it. Football, well, we could talk a little bit more basketball because there's so much to get to with this live. The live evaluation period is come and gone. Now they're going on again with these events that are happening. The 3SSB, the Nike EYBL, and there's two others. I think Reebok has one, and
Puma.
Puma.
Puma and Under Armour.
When did Puma get into Puma and Under Armour? There you go. It's like, wow, didn't have enough already. And so, but, you know, hey, I guess more opportunities again. It's just, I'm sure the coaches wish that maybe we could put those under one house or a wing. Everybody has their own wing to check out. But this, you got to make hay when the sun shines. And this is the opportunity, especially for a staff like Darren DeVries and company, because they're a new staff with the new school. They've got to get out and make that impression. And they've got to sell without having proof in the pudding, per se, at Indiana. Now, the good thing is you've got Indiana you can sell, and these players may not be all that greatly familiar with Indiana's former greatness, but their parents are. They all know Bob Knight, who Bob Knight was. They all know Indiana. They all know the stories. They all know that Indiana is crazy about basketball and that it is still. And that's why when people want to, you know, debate whether or not Indiana is a blue blood, yes, because let me tell you, how many programs could go through this length of nothingness and still remain as popular, as attentive grabbing as Indiana has? They're still one of the top draws on television when they play, and they still draw the names. So I think that that's going to help Indiana get back to that. They've got all of the resources they need, and I think now they have the right staff that they need to put them there, because you have guys that want to build. I mean, Drew Adams is from Bloomington. You know, nobody wants to make it happen more than he does. But it's just going to be fun to see how that grows. Don't expect the Kurt Cignetti treatment. But Indiana basketball, as much as it has not been what fans would like to have been, it wasn't Indiana football. And so Indiana football's rise to greatness just was mesmerizing. I think that I was talking about Indiana football earlier, Zach. I think this is a better team this year than it was last year. Front to back, overall, top to bottom, both sides. I can't say the defense is better, but I can't say that it's any less. And that's good enough, because they were top two defenses in the country last year. Offensively, I definitively think that they are better. An upgrade to the offensive line, an upgrade to the running backs room, equal at the wide receiver spot. And I'm going to call an upgrade at quarterback, not because Curtis Rourke was not exceptional. It's going to be very difficult to be better at decision-making than he was. He did not make mistakes, but I think that Fernando Mendoza is just more athletic. I think he's going to provide some opportunities in that regard. And the dude has a deep ball.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you were to line up last year's team on paper, just line up the roster against this year's team on paper, last year entering the season, this year entering the season, preseason, before anything had been done, before any wins had been tallied by Indiana last season, I think I would agree. I would say that this team is better on paper last season than last year's team was. Of course, last year's team went to the college football playoff. I'm not sure if this year's team will, but You talk about Fernando Mendoza. You talk about Curtis Rourke. I wrote a story. It was back in April, I believe, comparing their numbers from Pro Football Focus. And the numbers actually bear it out that Fernando Mendoza might be better than Curtis Rourke was before he got to IU. And, of course, you talk about IU. You look at the offense last year. All of those guys that transferred in, everybody that was playing for the first time under Kirsten Eddie got that Indiana bump, got that Indiana boost in production, got the Indiana boost in numbers and stats because of how efficient and effective Indiana's offense was. So Curtis Rourke's last year at Ohio compared to Fernando Mendoza's year last year at Cal, Fernando Mendoza was better. So when both were entering the program at IU, Fernando Mendoza came in as a more highly rated transfer. He was more, I guess, statistically better than Rourke was when both were entering IU. So there is reason to believe, plenty of reason to believe, that Mendoza can potentially exceed. Maybe not in year one. If he sticks around for a senior year and doesn't get drafted in year two, he could be one of the top quarterbacks in the entire country. But you look elsewhere, running back room, Roman Hamby, Lee Beebe, they're going to be great. Omar Cooper, Elijah Surratt, another year of development, they're going to be awesome. Along the offensive line, you get Pat Coogan from Notre Dame. That's a lot of experience there. You get at center, you're going to have a more experienced and more talented offensive line, you would figure, entering this year. Defensively, you lose C.J. West, you lose Jalen Walker. How much of that production can be replaced by a guy like Isaiah Jones, like Elijah Hardy in the linebacker core, or Stephen Daly and Jose Wheeler on the defensive line? So there's production more so on the defensive side. There's production that has been lost. So we'll see how Indiana is able to kind of fill that and replace that production, especially with Jalen Walker in the linebacking core and C.J. West and James Carpenter along the defensive line. But the secondary looks like it's going to be great again. Aiden Fisher's obviously back, and he's probably only going to get better. Mikhail Kamara could legitimately break Indiana's single-season all-time sack record this year if he can convert some of those QB pressures that he led the country in last year into more sacks. So again, on paper, this team looks at just as good, if not better, than last year's team. The difference, the schedule is a little bit more difficult this year. You've got those three road games against Iowa, Oregon, and Penn State, so we'll see what happens with those three games, but you could be looking at another 8, 9, 10-win season for Indiana on paper just heading into the season based on what the roster looks like and the talent that Kirsten Eddie has at his disposal.
Yeah, I haven't. I was hoping to be able to wait, but by the time we get there, it'll be well known. If I'm going to predict Indiana's football season this year, I see 10-2. I think that they beat Illinois at home, which is a must. There's not a home game that you can lose. And there are three road games out of their five road games. Three of those are big time opportunities. And of those three, Indiana has to win one, whether that's at Iowa, at Oregon, or at Penn State, which obviously the Oregon and Penn State games are going to be big time challenges. Penn State is a little bit more of a known commodity. Oregon a little less because they have a major change at quarterback. Penn State has Drew Allar back. So that's not, and they have a great defense. They're number one in the country, by the way. So anybody that talks about Indiana's schedule is a joke. I think that's ridiculous because they're playing at preseason number one Penn State. They're playing at whatever Oregon ends up being in the preseason, which I'm going to assume is probably top five, minimum top 10. So you already have two top 10 road games, and Iowa, they may not be ranked, but I don't know what they're going to be like with that new quarterback from South Dakota State who could throw the ball all over the yard. And then you have a home game, although it's a home game. Illinois, they're getting more love than most from national media. I've seen that Indiana still not quite getting that respect as Illinois because I keep seeing Illinois put up as the game of always above Indiana. And I'm like, boy, you're going to miss out, but that's okay. Although the over under for wins for Indiana is 8.5, which puts that right squarely with that Illinois game, I think, as the difference maker, counting those three potential road losses.
Yeah, the 9-3 probably seems the safest pick to me. You look at those four games. You if you're Indiana, you're assuming you win the other eight games. But if you look at the four toughest games on Indiana's schedule,
stop for a second and realize what you just said. The safe pick for Indiana football is 9-3. Want to remind people what that sounds like.
Exactly. But you're looking home against Wisconsin, at Purdue, at Maryland, home against UCLA, home against Michigan State. Those are the other Big Ten games on Indiana's schedule. Those on paper should be wins for IU, which, again, is crazy to think about in the year 2025. But if you look at those four tough conference games on Indiana's schedule this year, home against Illinois, on the road against Iowa, Oregon, and Penn State, I think you can comfortably say slash pretty confidently say Indiana wins at least one of those. And then if you think Indiana gets to that 10th win, which would probably be borderline college football playoff, especially considering two of those wins would be against the likes of Oregon, Penn State, Iowa, and Illinois. Two of those wins would be against two of those teams. So 9 wins would put Indiana at beating one of those four teams. 10 wins would put Indiana at beating two of those teams. So I'll probably lean 9-3 now, but I would not be surprised, Jim, if IU sneaks a win at Kinnick. Probably not Oregon, probably not Penn State, but if Indiana takes care of business at home against Illinois and sneaks into Kinnick and beats Iowa in Iowa City, I wouldn't be shocked to see it happen. So 10-2, definitely plausible, safer bet, probably 9-3, but it is crazy that we are having these types of discussions with Indiana football 2 years ago at this time. What we would have been discussing, will Indiana get to its fourth win? Will Indiana win a conference game? But not anymore, not with Kurt Cignetti.
We shall see, man. What is next up for you at thehoosier.com and thehoosier.com, period?
Well, we've got another live period this weekend in North Augusta for basketball and the basketball side of things. Peach Jam is this week, so a lot of coverage with that. Still keeping up on the football recruiting side. Keep an eye out on thehoosier.com today. I've got an update on Jameson Purcell, one of Indiana's top targets at quarterback in the 2027 class, and why a decision could be coming sooner rather than later from Purcell. Little teaser is something I've got coming later today for that. And, of course, Big Ten Football Media Days in Las Vegas next week. We'll see if Kurt Cignetti makes the same type of headlines he did last year at Big Ten Football Media Days. Should have plenty of coverage from that one. I'll be out there in Vegas for that along with Colin. So we should have you covered with some excellent coverage over the next week or so from that. And then, of course, visit season starting to get a little bit closer for basketball. So we'll see how that recruiting class starts to shake out for Indiana following some visits that Indiana gets from some of these 2026 kids.
We'll be looking forward to it. You will be out in Las Vegas for that along with Colin McMahon, right? Look forward to it. Hopefully we can, if you're not too busy, we'll have to try to work it out. But scheduling-wise, we'll try to get a live report from there if it works out. But looking forward to it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you. Right back at you, Jim. Always happy to be here.
Love to have you. Zach Browning from thehoosier.com joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. Always a fun day. Big thanks to Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. Make sure you keep it up with him. And Kyle Nedrip back with us next week as plenty of high school football around the corner, but there's so much going on. A lot of high school guys just got drafted, so we'll look forward to getting caught up with all of that. Tomorrow, Coach Griffith back with us. Appreciate that. Bob Kravitz. I'll probably get Kyler Staley on to see what else we can get going. Bob's got his event coming up on Monday, his ALS golf outing. So if you're interested, let me know and we'll get you set up. But, man, it has been a fun day as always. Great to be back. Still a little rusty on making things happen right, but we'll get her straightened out. Back tomorrow to do it all again. Appreciate you. Until then, go out. Have yourselves a great day. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.